Welcome to the Veterans for Peace Radio Hour and Podcast on Radio Free Nashville, 107.1 and 103.7, and streaming live at radiofreenashville.org.
When the armistice was declared on November 11th at 11 a.m. in 1918, everybody rang bells all around the world. Everybody who had a bell rang the bells, and they were joyous bells. War was over, but they were also, bittersweet because there was so many people, lost people in the war.
That was Veterans for Peace member Dave Logsdon, coordinator of the Veterans for Peace Reclaim Armistice Day project. And if we ever needed to reclaim Armistice Day, reclaim peace, it is now. So as we approach another November 11th, Armistice Day, we will talk about Armistice Day and more. But first, my name is Jim Wohlgemuth, and I'm here with fellow Vietnam veteran Harvey Bennett. We are members of Veterans for Peace. Veterans for Peace is an international organization of military veterans and allies whose collective efforts are to build a culture of peace, humanity, equality, and justice. Just go to veteransforpeace.org. This radio show and podcast is on stations across the country. Thanks to the Pacifica Radio Network. We're also on SoundCloud, Anchor Podcast, Spotify, and your phone podcast app. Just search Veterans for Peace. Veterans for Peace Radio Hour and Radio Free Nashville are supported in part by you, the listener, because it is you that keeps Radio Free Nashville going. And as a result, this radio show is then picked up by the Pacifica Radio Network so that we are heard across the country. So if you think this is important, just go to radiofreenashville.org and click on the donate button and keep Harvey and I on the air in every time zone in the U.S. And if you support the work of Veterans for Peace, because we are clearly working hard, go to our site, veteransforpeace.org. We've got a donate button there also. This Saturday, November 11th, is what the United States calls Veterans Day, but it used to be called Armistice Day. And Veterans for Peace has had a project, and we will talk to the facilitator of that project, Dave Logsdon, in a minute, but I want you to just listen. Here is the Veterans for Peace Help Us Celebrate Armistice Day 2023. And it says, this year we celebrate the 105th anniversary of the signing of the World War I armistice that ceased hostilities on the Western Front, which took effect on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918. With this instrument, nations still recovering from the dreadful nightmare of World War I, one of the deadliest conflicts in human history, collectively embraced peace as a universal principle and called for an end to all wars. Armistice Day was initially designated as a day to be dedicated to the cause of world peace and to be therefore celebrated. But when political conditions at the end of the Great War inevitably led to World War II, Armistice Day was rebranded as Remembrance Day in the Commonwealth and Veterans Day in the United States. Stripped of its original intention, November 11th became a day identified with war instead of peace, a day for remembering yet more war dead, honoring all veterans, and glorifying militarism. As military veterans serving the cause of world peace, Veterans for Peace is a leader in lifting up the original intention of November 11th as a day for celebrating peace. Some veterans chapters held annual Armistice Day commemorations for years before an official Veterans Day resolution made it to Veterans for Peace. By coordinating events held across the country, we insert our call for peace into the national conversation each Veterans Day. Clearly, a day that celebrates peace, not war, is the best way to honor the sacrifices of those who have served in war. We know the destruction of war has caused and continues to cause, and we understand its senseless futility. In reclaiming November 11th as Armistice Day, we call for an end to armed conflict and recommit ourselves to the hard work of building real and lasting peace. That's a Veterans for Peace statement. And now we will head off to our conversation with Dave Logsdon.
We don't have a Veterans Day march here, but we hold a at the Victory Memorial thing, a World War One memorial, and we do a and it's a they planted trees for every Minnesotan that died in World War One, and they have little name placards. So we march and stop at these name plaques, and then at the Victory Memorial, we have our 11 bells ringing salute. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that we've been doing that for over 30 years now. The first time we did it was in 91. And
well, before we get too far into this, yeah, we better get going so I can use it for the show. So, let me, as the national networks are already bombarding us with militarism in their salute to service, as their new shows popping up, like the Dennis Quaid hosting a show about pilot, Special Forces, The Ultimate Test, and others, we thought we'd better step back and remember that we used to celebrate peace. And so Dave Logsdon is here to talk about Armistice Day. And so, Dave, before we get too far going, could you tell us a bit about yourself and the military, why you joined Veterans for Peace and when, and why you initiated this program to reclaim Armistice Day?
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm Dave Logsdon, and I was living in Chicago, and I got my draft notice, and I said, I'm headed 1966. I'm headed over to the Navy recruiter. I thought, well, 4 years of misery probably worth 2 years of ducking and diving in the Army. So I joined the Navy. I ended up being a combat veteran anyway, because our destroyer was off the coast of Vietnam. And
I got to stop you there, because we got a parallel. We're parallel, because my mom, as she saw my grades coming from the first year of college, knew that I was going to get drafted shortly. And she tells me, the next day you're going down to the recruiter. And so I joined the Navy to avoid the Army also, and to avoid Vietnam. And of course, like you, your destroyer was in the zone, and my LST was right off the Mekong Delta. So, all right, just a quick little parallel.
There you go. Yeah. And yeah, as much as you should try to avoid it. I mean, I still wasn't in the jungles, and I didn't have a lot of, I didn't see a lot of people dying in my arms, you know, so I avoided a lot of that. But but technically, I am, you know, a combat veteran. So I think we should have been more scared than we were.
I don't know. I had several times I was very scared.
You know, you're just sort of like, oh, they can't hit us.
I know.
I was like, they can hit you. They did. They got us a couple blasts in the middle, but we survived okay. But enough to scare the shit out of us. Anyway, yeah, Armistice Day. Back in the late 80s into the early 90s, one of our co-founders, Steve McCune, communicated with his native people in Flandreau, South Dakota. And Flandreau, South Dakota is located about 25, 30 miles from the Pipestone Sacred Native American site. And they did a 28, 30 mile march on November 11th to Pipestone, and had a pipe ceremony at Pipestone on the Armistice Day. Well, the next year they couldn't make that happen every year. So Steve did the research, and after when the armistice was declared on the November 11th at 11 a.m. in 1918. In Redwood, everybody rang bells all around the world. Everybody who had a bell rang the bells, and they were joyous bells. War was over, but they were also, you know, bittersweet, because there was so many people, lost people in the war. And so he decided that we'll do a bell ringing. And so the Veterans for Peace group in 1991 went out to Fort Snelling and did our first bell ringing. And then every year We've at different points and different places in the Twin Cities. We've done it in the cold. We've done it indoors, which was nice, and a few years, and now we're back outdoors in North Minneapolis now. But the whole concept of it is that, and that day when the truce was signed at 11 a.m., silence fell on the battlefields. And the significance of that, because there was constant fighting going on in this trench warfare. And then when all of a sudden it was like, boom, no more shooting. And it was just this amazing event. And in some parts of it, soldiers from either side met in the middle in no man's land and embraced, dropped their weapons and just let us go home, you know. And so in that, to commemorate that moment, that's why we ring the bells and we talk about why we ring the bells. And of course, it's morphed into, we do it Memorial Day. We do it, one of our people passes away and the family requests a bell ringing. And the bell ringing, it really touches a lot of people deeply because it's not like the 21 gun salute, you know, where it's a jarring, and for a lot of people, it recreates a lot of post-traumatic, it brings up a lot of post-traumatic stress. The bell ringing is a little bit more solemn. It's much more profound. And when we do that, our bell ringing, we try to keep the politics out of it as much as possible. I said, there's plenty of time to and space to rage against the machine. But at this time, we remember all the lives that were lost, civilian and non-civilian, in wars. And in 1954, the Armistice Day, they had a law was passed by some conservative congressmen to change it to Veterans Day. And ever since it changed to Veterans Day, it's morphed into this day of glorification of war, flags, patriotic speeches, anthems. And I go to an Armistice Day thing at a British pub. I've been part of their program. And the whole program is people coming up from different consulates and talking about the brave men who died in battle. There's anthems being played. And at the end, I was like, well, I hate to bring anybody down here, but war is hell and war is sucks. And the idea behind armistice is to commemorate the horror of war and to advocate for not doing it anymore, you know. And I've had a lot of people come up to me afterwards and quietly say, oh, I really appreciate what you said, you know, and that, you know. And even the owner of the Vikings brought me a Guinness. So I think that was now I said, do I have to root for the Vikings now, I guess? But yeah. So anyway, the upshot is that even the places where Remembrance Day and Armistice Day is still called that, they still do a lot of the patriotic stuff. But here with the Veterans Day, it's definitely skewed towards the glorification.
You mentioned Remembrance Day. Where is it called Remembrance Day?
Canada.
Canada?
In Canada, and I've been told that if you're in the airport or anywhere in Canada at 11 a.m., all sounds, everybody stops for 1 minute. The whole nation stops for 1 minute. I do think that is pretty cool that they did that. But they do, Remembrance Day, and I think, I don't know if it's called Armistice Day in England. I think it might be Remembrance Day.
It's Remembrance Day in the UK as well.
And in France, I think it's still Armistice. It's good for us to be there to remind people that the original intent of Armistice Day was to remember why war is had its day, and we need to stop and really think about what we're doing instead of saying, now it's your turn, young man, to go fight in war. And that's bullshit. I mean, excuse me.
So why did these conservative people in Congress, do you have any idea what their motive was?
Well, I'm assuming that it's the same for both sides of the aisle. The err on the side of patriotism, err on the side of talking, supporting the military, and it's for some reason they believe that talking about peace is somehow denigrating the military, which I don't, we don't, none of us believe that, but yeah, I think that's their thinking.
All
Yeah,
right.
so that was Eisenhower, I think, wasn't it? His administration, 1954.
In 1954, we were getting more involved in Vietnam.
So, and this has always confused me because I grew up in a time where I heard about it as Armistice Day. Now, and it had officially changed, but still the people, the adults, which were coming out of World War II, it was still Armistice Day, and then it slowly devolved into, well, it's all Veterans Day now, even though it had officially changed. And I just always was curious because the purpose of Armistice Day was to celebrate peace. And so, if I'm hearing you right, it was just this idea of let's err on the side of patriotism or err on the side of militarism rather than celebrate peace. I wonder if by that point the military industrial complex had clicked in and said, well, we don't want to be celebrating peace. It doesn't cash out.
Well, yeah, I do think that you're correct in that. I do think that the military industrial complex, in fact, Eisenhower famously called it and said, this thing is becoming a monster. And it just was a perfect storm for the corporate America weapons manufacturers, politicians who like to wrap themselves in the flag, and military. Because you remember, if you think about military people coming in the 50s, coming out of West Point, they're saying, if you're going to be a career military guy, well, you want to do what you were trained to do. You want to have wars, so you're kind of inclined to say, oh yeah, war is good. And it's good for the manufacturers. Everybody's winning, and then it starts growing and starts growing and growing. And that's why I think Eisenhower said that about the military, because you can see the how this thing was cycling up to be this monster. And the next thing you know, it's the tail wagging the dog in U.S. politics.
And that was also the time of the Red Scares and the
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The Cold War with the Soviet Union, and communism was the bugaboo.
Yeah.
And anything that ignored that and called for peace and mutual understanding was not going to escape a lot of
Yeah.
criticism for being soft on the commies, basically.
Now, and the thing is too is like, now once the wall came down, and Russia says, we're not playing, and then all of a sudden they start freaking out because we need to have a big bad enemy to get the keep the thing rolling. There's no sense having spending all this money on weapons if we don't have anybody that's a threat. So when Russia said, sorry, we're not playing anymore, we're going to concentrate in different areas, and everybody's like, holy crap, we have to find a new. So then the terrorism thing came up, and that was, I think, the terrorists were almost like it was like encouraged and invented so that we could keep making the weapons and keep we have to the war on terror. The war on terror was, the whole thing. We got into Iraq because of the war on terror, to Afghanistan, and the whole theory of endless wars. Got to keep something going. And then now terrorism was starting to look kind of like weak, and so, well, we gotta think of something. What about going back to Russia again? Let's go back and make Russia the big threat, and so we can continue this madness.
Yeah. Of course, we expanded NATO to the point where now Russia's back to being our big threat.
Yeah, right. If NATO would have just stayed right there, you know, and like when Baker talked to him and said, and they said, well, that is U.S. backed, and NATO saying, no, we're not going to go, we're not going further east. We're not going to be a threat to you guys. We're just going to stay right here. Just let Germany reunite and everything's cool. And Russia was naively, I think, said, okay, we'll take you at your word. And of course, they've been creeping many inches closer to the Russian border. Mm-hmm. And I just think you can imagine, a foreign power doing that to us and creeping, increasing their in Canada and Mexico and getting closer to our borders, we would be freaking out.
We did freak out in 1962.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. And that was just an example of it, but you're right. And so this country, and you know, the beauty of it is that we're so deep involved in the belly of the beast that the narrative is such an easy narrative to control for the media. And now the media is complicit in so many things, and that's a whole different subject. But they control the narrative, and you can, that's the ultimate goal, you know. And now they've kind of controlled the narrative in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. When did you join Veterans for Peace, Dave?
You know, I in the 90s, I was still working, and I remember writing checks, and you know, but I never went to a meeting. And then when the Iraq War, the run-up to the Iraq War, Bruce Berry, who's my neighbor, he said, well, Dave, you got to get out here. You know, so I got out there with Bruce and a few people and, you know, protested the Iraq thing. And he said, yeah, you got to come to a meeting. And, all right, I'll come to a meeting. And came to a meeting, and I liked the people, and I got involved that way. And went to the big demonstration in D.C., and that was an adventure. And it was 100,000 people, and I got to meet Dave Klein before he died. It was like he was on his last legs at that time, but it was an honor to meet him. Yeah, I slowly morphed into just showing up and being one of the guys until somebody said, well, we need a vice president. And I kind of raised my hand, and then I became vice president. And then next thing you know, I'm president of the chapter, and the rest is history, you know. But it's been 23 years now with them.
So you said you went to the demonstration just in the run-up to the war. Was that Operation Dire Distress?
No, actually, this was in the pinnacle of the war, and Bush was still president. So I think it was 2007, 2006, 2007. Okay. So, it was a big demonstration. Jay Fonda and David Klein spoke at that. Uh-huh. He was real frail, and his voice was even real frail, but he couldn't even, they had a march around the White House, and we just sat with David at the reflecting pole because he couldn't.
Tell everybody who Dave Klein was.
Yeah, Dave Klein was a former president of National. That was back in the Iraq War, I think. And Dave Klein was a powerful cat. You know, he Agent Orange finally got him, you know. But he was a combat. He always, the story he always said about how it was a combat, close quarter combat thing, and when he shot this guy, a Vietnamese guy, and looking in his wallet, you see pictures of this guy's family, and you know, he had a sweetheart, and he realizes that this guy was fighting for his country in Vietnam. He was a freedom fighter, and that here I was shooting this guy, and I'm the enemy, the invader. And he said that spirit, guy's spirit kind of morphed into him, and that was his epiphany moment where he said, I can't do this anymore, you know.
So many sad stories. So you're president of the chapter, and then you decided to reclaim Armistice Day. Tell us about.
Well, yeah, we've been reclaiming it long before I was involved, and but I just was involved in the whole idea of reclaiming it. And in our convention, I don't know if you guys remember Wayne Whitman. Wayne Whitman was one of our solid members for years, and he was very prominent nationally and a national best for peace as well. And when Wayne got up and during the convention in Madison, it was like 2000. I'm trying to think if it was 2014 or 2013, something around there. And he said, it was at the executive meeting, and I was just sitting in, and Wayne got up and said, I want to make a resolution that make 2018 convention in Minneapolis, St. Paul, to commemorate the 100th year of the signing of the armistice. So right then was the mark of that convention was all about reclaiming Armistice Day. And that was the theme in the 2018 convention. And of course, Wayne never lived to be there. I always joked, I said, you're the oldest guy in the chapter's getting up and saying, 5 years from now, we're going to have a convention in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And I said, well, like, okay, hopefully you're around. But he never did the finish line. But we did have a really nice remembrance of Wayne in that convention too. But so that after that, it kind of got to be much more of a national Vets for Peace thing. And more, you know, I'd be on Zoom things. I'd be like correcting people to say Veterans Day. I said, nope, you mean Armistice Day. And I think pretty much now across all the Vets for Peace, they're all smaller groups sometimes, but they get together and they call it Armistice Day. And that's, and we did a campaign to try and get as many churches to ring the bells 11 times, you know, and we did. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to do that, but we did manage to get like 30 or 40 churches that were rang bells on the 11th hour. I always joke too that the Basilica of St. Paul Cathedral, they rang their bells, but of course they rang their bells every hour. So he was like, well, they rang it on the 11 a.m., you know.
Right.
But, that's something I'd like to rekindle. But again, next year, we start calling the churches and trying to get the campaign going. But,
yeah.
And you know, and sometimes people are just not, even churches are just not willing to listen or participate or, you know, whatever. No. And you know, and speaking of churches, I go to a Unity church in Nashville, but I avoid this day and I'll avoid next Sunday because I don't want to participate because I know the minister is going to be obligated to recognize veterans. And I just finally got sick of it about 3, 4, 5 years ago, when we'd be sitting there and they'd play Anchors Away, and my wife is giving me the elbow, well, why don't you stand up? And I'm thinking, oh my God. So, you know, I grudgingly stood up, but I'm thinking, come on,
yeah.
Why are you honoring me who didn't want to go, who joined the Navy to avoid the Army, who got out as soon as I can, you know, just don't. It's not something that.
Yeah, I've been known to take a pass on that myself, but you know, sometimes I've found it a little bit educational for the congregation, because when they ask veterans to stand up, you know, there might be 300 people in the church, you get 4 or 5 people stand up.
Yeah,
that says a lot.
It does, and you think about that now, it's even worse now. If you watch any professional sports, you see all these very fit young men and women. They would be perfect for the military, but they're not joining the military. Not if I have anything to say about it, right?
You're listening to our conversation with Dave Logsdon of Veterans for Peace and coordinator of the Reclaim Armistice Day project within Veterans for Peace. And we're talking about Armistice Day and the military. Now, back to Dave.
But, you know, our best counter-recruiters are Iraq and Afghanistan vets.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people who say, well, I want to go join the Marines. So you go talk to Uncle Billy or Aunt Jody, who was in Iraq. You go talk to her first. And they go talk to them, and they say, first thing they say is, don't believe the recruiter.
Yeah.
Exactly. Then they go from there, you know. And,
yeah.
And recruiters just got a job to do, just like a used car salesman. Mm-hmm. And sell you that jalopy and say, oh, no, it's great. Money, great. You know, they'll sell you. I always think that military recruiters are here.
As you point halfway up the screen.
And used car salesmen are just...
a little elevated from military recruiters.
Paying too much for a car is a lot different from signing up for something that might kill you.
Yeah, and so much now they're online, and it's really a tough battle because they're trying to go in there in that culture of militarism, of shoot them up and
mm-hmm.
And the army's just saying, well, join the army, you'd be just doing that for real. You know, and killing people for real, and that's a great recruiting tool. You know, so many Iraq and Afghanistan, and before that, Vietnam veterans.
Comeback damage.
I always say, you look, go down that wall, you see all those names in D.C., see all those names, and then multiply by two, and you got all the people whose names aren't on that wall. We're sitting next door in the foxhole. With one of the people that was on the wall, and they've never been the same since. And they came home, and it may have been a real pain in the ass to their community because they were so damaged, and they finally took their own lives. And
another reason to reclaim Armistice Day, to reclaim peace.
And their name is not honored on that wall.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And they're still happening now with the young vets are still... there's two things. A lot of times veterans have guns and they know how to use guns
mm-hmm.
and they've got a lot of pain. And like so many people, it just ends badly.
Connected to that and connected to something you said earlier about sports. I mean, this is these are cringeworthy moments where all, you know, the coaches for the NFL are all in either camo or now this army brown sweatshirts. They're all there, and you know, the flyovers and every commercial break, it's some sort of salute to service. And if they really were saluting service, they demand that the VA was fully funded, and fully staffed, and absolutely drives me crazy. And you see these commercials where, oh, be part of our team. You know, they're going after those kids who couldn't make the football team or couldn't make the basketball team or the baseball team and say, well, you can join our team. And they don't really know.
Yeah, you could imagine these kids who join us because, oh, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to do drones and all this stuff, and they get into boot camp, and then some guy with a third grade education is screaming at him and calling him a maggot, and get down and give him 20, and these guys are like, well, what did I get myself into? And then they get out of boot camp, and I said, well, the recruiter said I probably would be doing computer stuff. Well, those billets are filled, but we do have openings in infantry. So we're going to reassign your billet to infantry. It's like, what? And I think that's why the younger Afghan and Iraq veterans are great counter-recruiters because they just say, don't believe that crap. Because you go in there and you're Once you sign that contract, as they say, your ass is grass, and they are the lawnmower. So you do what you say, soldier, and there you go. You know, and I always say too, it's like, think about it, is that once you join the military, you are a second class citizen. Guy laying face down in the drunk in the park, he's got more rights than you do. You know, and that's why, oh, well, thank you for your service. I said, I didn't serve anything. And actually, ironically, my rate was ship service. So I actually, that was my rate. So I did, so I was a skivvy washer for the first couple of years. And so that was my service. I said,
Well, how'd now you could have been a contractor getting twice as much pay.
How'd you know I was washing people's underwear? Thank you for asking, you know. But I do think that, I think most of us have had people come up and say, thank you for your service. And it's always like, you kind of, you know, you want to, they're trying to be nice, and they're coming up to you and they're trying to be kind to you, but you don't want to, so you don't want to just say, forget about what service, and, you know, snap at them. I think you try to say, there are a lot of people really doing service, like firemen and nurses and doctors and social workers. Are people who are doing a lifetime of service. Thank them.
Yeah.
I was a draftee. I was trying to get through, trying to get out of there intact, mentally and physically. That's it.
So these days, you look around the world these days, and I can't help believe that reclaiming Armistice Day is way more important than it has been for a long, long time.
I think you've got a point there. I mean, you talk about parades and all that. Look how many people have been marching through the streets in the last month, all over the country and all over the world, calling for peace. Calling for a ceasefire. You know, if there was ever a time when people were ready to hear that message and need to hear that message, it's now.
And then we're all here fully supporting this sociopath in Israel. And, you know, and Zionism does not speak to Judaism as two separate things. And it's really sad to see the White House spokesperson, the press person, press secretary, and she's out there saying, equating the people in the streets with neo-Nazis in Charlottesville. And I'm like, what a vile thing to do. What an ignorant statement to make. Go out there and I was saying yesterday when we're out here with 2,000 people, I said, you know, I can't find the neo-Nazis. Where are they at? It's not an anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic rally, it's a pro-Palestinian rally.
But that's what they want to plaster, you know, label people as if they don't support Israel's genocidal plans for Gaza. Oh, you're anti-Semitic.
Somehow they've conflated peace with anti-Semitism.
Oh, that's why the JVPs, the Jewish Voices for Peace, are in a great position of to speak out and be in leading the choir here, because it's hard to say they're Jewish haters if they're Jewish. And I think that's why it's important to people who are Jewish to be the lead spokespeople in this cry for peace.
And they've been fantastic. They've been so effective at getting mass numbers out there, people willing to be arrested, and their voices have been so, I mean, they are so clear and in their understanding of, you know, what they believe, and their beliefs are based on what they've learned in Judaism.
Exactly. And I gotta give a sound out, and I don't usually do it, but Nashville, we had a rally, and it was sponsored by Veterans for Peace. We did it, and we normally expect about 6, 10, maybe 20 people, and we filled up two blocks across from Vanderbilt University, two blocks, three deep, three wow. deep. So we
those
had,
were not those were big blocks too.
And those are big
Centennial Park. That's a big block.
Those are big blocks. So
I saw the video, Jim. It was fantastic.
Yes, it was. It
and
was
the
amazing.
Energy in the. You know, they sounded like 1,000 people, whether they were or not.
Yes. I mean, so, I mean, and this is a southern city.
Yeah, I know. Wow. This is, yeah.
I know. This is a southern city. And the crowd, it was just wonderful. It was such a diverse crowd. You had, and everybody, the primary thing was, let's support a peace fire. Let's support a ceasefire and then support Palestinian rights, support humanitarian rights. And you had young people, old people, white people, black people. You had Muslims, Christians, and the number of signs from the Jewish community was just glorious.
And that's wonderful to hear.
Yes.
And it is really hard to get, and I'll tell you what, younger people, and they bring the juice. You know, we're veteran protesters and doing vigils and stuff. We're used to having people with walkers coming up and being in our vigil, and to see young people with vibrant voices, it gives you so much juice. We all need that, to get out there and get that feeling like, am I the only one who feels this way? And you get out in the streets, it helps a lot of people feel like, hey, I'm not the only one that feels that way. Look at these people. I got to get out of here.
Dave, what are you going to do to reclaim Armistice Day on Saturday the 11th?
Well, we'll do what we usually do and hopefully have a nice turnout, the weather cooperates and any events around that we're aware of to try to support them on that day too. So. We're just going to keep on doing what we're going to do. But
area where there's a lot of traffic, where people see this? Or...
Well, it's going to be Saturday, so we will have more. Yeah, a lot of times it falls during the week, and it's 11 o'clock, and so you don't get as much car traffic, So I think we will get some attention. We do get people saying, well, wondering what this big group is. Gathering here that's always an issue, right? But you know what? More and more, you're getting more and more honks. Very few people rolling their windows down and saying, get a job it's funny because they're yelling at, and all the people around them were all retired people.
Yeah, right.
Get a job.
I retired 20 years ago. What are you talking about?
Get a job. Are you out of your mind? But I remember one time somebody said when Trump was in and we're doing a demonstration, he said, where were you guys when Obama was? And I said, we're right here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't pay attention to that. But yeah, it's a struggle.
Yeah, well, we're going to have this parade here in Nashville. And for those listening in the Nashville area, it goes along West End and then down Broadway. And it'll start at 11 a.m. on Saturday. So please come out and give us some support. When you see the Veterans for Peace, give us a wave, give us a peace sign, and maybe say thank you. You will notice us because one of our members has a van. And we're going to try and plaster it with signs that basically say, reclaim Armistice Day, reclaim peace. Yeah. Reclaim Armistice Day, let's have a ceasefire. So we'll do that. And we hope some of the people understand.
Yeah.
Because so many young people have no clue about Armistice Day.
Well, we used to have that sign that we would put on the side of the van that was... the Armistice Day Proclamation, 1926. And remember, the reviewing stand saw it, and they read it, not realizing what they were reading.
We've got time. Let's hear that. So, Proclamation, Armistice Day, 1926. This was done November 3rd, 1926, by the President of the United States of America, Calvin Coolidge at the time. So, the proclamation is this. Whereas the 11th of November, 1918 marked the cessation of the most destructive sanguinary, and far-reaching war in human annals. And whereas, it is fitting that the recurring anniversary of this date should be commemorated with thanksgiving and prayer, and exercises designed to perpetuate peace through goodwill and mutual understanding between nations. And whereas, by a concurrent resolution passed by the Senate on May 25th, 1926, and by the House of Representatives on June 4th, 1926, the President was requested to issue a proclamation calling upon the officials to display the flag of the United States on all government buildings on November 11th and inviting the people of the United States to observe the day in schools and churches and other places with appropriate ceremonies expressive of our gratitude for peace and our desire for the continuance of friendly relations with all peoples. You guys mind if I read that again? It said, inviting the people of the United States to observe the day in schools, churches, and other places with the appropriate ceremonies expressive of our gratitude for peace and our desire for the continuance of friendly relations with all other people. Now, just as an aside, that did not include flyovers. That did not include fireworks. That did not include military parades. That did not include camo on the sidelines. That did not include marching bands with John Philip Sousa. That included ceremonies expressive of our gratitude for peace and our desire for the continuance of friendly relations with all people. In witness whereof, I have hereunto set my hand and caused to be affixed the great seal of the United States. Done. There is the proclamation. So, Dave, what else?
We have our peace bus, and we have, we'll probably have our, I tried out our U.S. military fuels on climate crisis. A big banner that we put on the side of it, but we'll park the bus real close to the memorial, so that will be a visible, our visible thing. Because the bus attracts attention, you know. So.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you brought that up, because it is so much more important to start really considering Armistice Day, because militarism not only kills people through war, but it's killing the climate.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we're the U.S. military is the biggest contributor to carbon fuel in the air of any entity throughout the world.
Yeah. Well, in 800 bases, right? So there's a lot of toxic sites there, you know, and not just for the military people, but just around the surrounding area in these military bases. There's a lot of PFAs running around and not very good for the immediate environment, you know. And speaking of military base, I think the press is complicit in so much of what's going on now. And my closing thought on this is that when they said, well, the Iranian-based militia fired missiles into a U.S. base in Syria, and nobody in the press ever thought to say, why do we have a base, a military base, in a country that has not said, oh, yeah, why don't you guys come and put a military base here? They don't want us there. Mm-mm. How is that not an invasion? But nobody ever asked the question. It's like, why do we have a military base in Syria?
That's right. Why do we have a military base in Syria? Why do we, you know, and nobody ever asked the question, why do we have 800 bases throughout the world?
Yeah, I know. Just one question. It's just, you know, a simple question. Never gets asked.
Well, maybe more people are starting to listen to Veterans for Peace these days than they have been.
We hope so. Honestly, we lost a few people because of our stance on sending billions of dollars of weaponry into Ukraine. Mm. And we lost a lot of people who said we should be supporting the Ukrainian people with the military. Mm. And we have to remind them and saying, take a look at our statement of purpose. We're kind of an anti-war group. Breaking news here, you know. We're abolishing war. There's not an asterisk on it that says except for
NATO members, except for countries primarily of white people, white Christians.
It's right there in black and white. And why are people making a big deal about why aren't you supporting? We should be supporting the Ukrainian people. And yes, I understand that it's a terrible situation, but sending billions of dollars in weaponry, it's just prolonging the war.
Exactly.
We could have supported the Ukrainian people by avoiding the war altogether.
Absolutely.
Negotiating in good faith.
Right. And the Victoria Nulands of the world would have been in there since 2014, raising hell and bringing shenanigans into that government. So,
Harvey, you just said negotiating in good faith.
Yeah.
Don't you think you're pushing the envelope a little bit too much? We haven't negotiated in good faith since. Let's see, 1643. I don't know. I don't think we ever negotiated in good faith.
You're talking about ceding the high moral ground. We ceded that back in when we tried to eliminate all the native people from this.
Right.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we're your friends. Take these blankets. Don't worry. We washed them. So to spread the smallpox around. Well, Dave, we're almost at an hour. So also said we asked for a song that you think might send us out of here.
Oh yeah, I would, my radio show I played Eric Bogle's Green Fields of France.
Okay,
either that or and the band played Waltzing Matilda, which is an amazing anti-war song.
Yeah.
Yes.
Both those songs are good. Eric Bogle.
Okay, very good. And thanks so much. No, this has been great, and we really appreciate Mike Ferner's recommendation that you come on. And, you know, we just hope for the best as far as changing the message of this country. And I think the people are picking it up. But like you said, I just don't think, definitely not the government and definitely not the media.
People are getting off their couches and going out into the street with a message of peace. And I think that once they realize what the fundamental issue is, that's going to translate into more public pressure to avoid wars.
And hopefully that the military people are overplaying their hand to the point where the world is saying enough, enough. And right now, the U.S. has got very precious few allies in the world, and we keep up the shenanigans.
You were by the day.
Yeah, yeah. My goodness.
You just wonder, what are we thinking? Well, off to the song. And we'll let you go. That was our conversation with Dave Loxton, member of Veterans for Peace and facilitator of the Reclaim Armistice Project. And don't forget to Reclaim Armistice Day, Saturday, November 11th. So here is Eric Bogle and the Green Fields of France.
Well, how to do, Private William O'Brien? Do you mind if I sit here down by your grey side? And I'll rest for a while in the warm summer sun. I've been walking all day long and I'm nearly done. I see by your gravestone you were only 19 when you joined the glory's fallen in 1916. Well, I hope you died quick and I hope you died clean. Or Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the five lonely? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? And did you leave a wife for a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory enshrined? And though you died back in 1916, to that loyal heart are you always 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, forever enshrined behind some glass pane in an old photograph torn and tattered and stained and fading to yellow in a brown leather frame? Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lonely? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? Well, the sun shining now on these green fields of France, the warm wind blows gently and the red poppies dance. The trenches have vanished long under the plough. No gas and no barbed wire, no guns firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses in mute witness stand to man's blind indifference to his fellow man and a whole generation who were butchered and damned. Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lonely? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lower you down? Did the bugles sing last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? And I can't help but wonder, Willie McBride, do all those who lie here know why they died? Did you really believe them when they told you the cause? You really believe that this war would end war? The suffering, the sorrow, the glory, shame, the killing, the dying, it was all done in vain. For Willie McBride, it all happened again, and again, and again, and again, and again. Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lonely? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flute? did the pipes ply the flute to the floor?